Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Redfern Originals podcast with me, Paul Machin, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club, and from the Ragamuffins, Dave Jaggs as well. Yes, Dave drew the short straw on coming and sitting in for Chris Pajach this week. Thanks for coming in, though, mate.
You're welcome.
You come in with a bit of a, you came in with like an issue, a bit of like a down on, but you've actually been, you've been bouncing around the office since, so I'm looking forward to getting your take on the match in a little bit.
Breath of fresh air he's been.
Breath of fresh air. Not saying it's anything to do with the fact that we may have, well, I say we, I've had nothing to do with this, but you just may have nailed the next Liverpool manager's song before he's even been confirmed as the next Liverpool manager.
Nail is an understatement, mate.
We've
Jags, you're the man to ask.
Mate, I will say this is it. Ivan Avello next year, boxed off already. It's incredible.
That Alan Kerbishley song is an absolute screamer. Right, Sam, before we get into, obviously, Liverpool drawing with Manchester United and the state that leaves us in emotionally and in terms of the league title and all of that stuff. A couple of things to draw to your attention. I did something on socials. We put something out in a variety of different places, but we've been telling you, obviously, we've got a live event coming up. It's supposed to be coming up on the 24th of April, but the Merseyside Derby has been rescheduled for that day. So in communication with the venue, we have moved the date of that event. That event is now on Wednesday, the 4th of September. If you go to axs.com, you want to come see us in London, then you can do. If you type Redmen in, you'll also notice that Method Man and Redman are playing as well, which is good to know that we're still showing up in Redman searches all 14 years later. Good to see. Get involved with all that. Obviously, it'll be in the international break, so no amount of fixture rescheduling is going to ruin that. It might even distract from England playing, which would be even better. Come and join us. That tickets are at axs.com for that one. And before we dive in, we've got Dave Jaggs with us. You're a busy boy coming up, aren't you?
Yeah, as ever. End of the season, we're doing the biggest show we've been involved in the centre of Liverpool, the Liverpool Empire, 15th of May. With no one less than Kevin Keegan and Alan Kennedy and Ian Callaghan discussing the 50th anniversary of when we won the FA Cup against Newcastle. Feels a bit harsh on Kennedy because obviously he was playing for Newcastle that day. So it's like it's like getting Steve McMahon in to discuss when Everton got beat 5-0 at Goodison all those years ago. And it's like, yeah, what was it like being stuffed 5-0? Obviously it was Shankly's last trophy in 1974. So it's like a significant anniversary. And the way with obviously Klopp calling time a couple of weeks after, it does feel like a big sort of mirroring moment. And
it's an interesting one because obviously Kevin Keegan doesn't do loads of public stuff anymore. Ian Callaghan, absolute Liverpool legend through and through, the ultimate sort of Scouse legend when it comes to playing for the football club, most appearances of anyone ever. But it's interesting that Nicky Alt's been in this, right? And we know Nicky, a big long-time friend of the show, the guy behind YNWA, the Liverpool musical, and actually getting you guys involved in this as well. So is it the Ragamuffin?
Yeah,
what's
full
the
band.
To play.
Yes, it's the full band. So, funnily enough, the reason we ever started doing, Liverpool stuff directly was through a mate of ours called Dan Ross, who was the singer in the Y, Y, uh, can I forget the acronym, YNWA show. Mm-hmm. So he was the kind of the busker type musician for those shows, and he also played, I think he did the one night in Istanbul one, yeah, as well, for at least for a stint. And if it wasn't for him, then we wouldn't have ended up playing at the ground and doing those sorts of shows. So it's a nice sort of full circle. And Nicky was telling me that Nicky actually introduced Dan to his wife, it was just like, if it hadn't been for that, you know. So, you know, Nicky, he's good at bringing people together.
Mm. He's a wonderful fella, and no one's ever had a bad time in a Nicky Holt show.
No.
So yeah, get involved with that. What was the date again?
15th of May. So we were, I'll tell you what, when you're talking about your show being rescheduled, we were having kittens as to when that Fulham game, or potentially if they'd have moved the Everton game, yeah, to that week. We were like, well, if Liverpool are playing Everton in a Merseyside derby that could see them relegated and us win the league simultaneously, you know, is there going to be a City left?
The build up to the final weekend of the season,
oh, it's going to be incredible.
Very, very good indeed. It's the Empire, right?
Yeah, the Empire. So
get involved with that. And new record?
Yes, we've got a couple of things. So we've got a new record that's already on its way out, called Too Many Dance Floors, which is about burning the candles, depending on how many candles you want to burn, at both ends, which feels quite apt given how many trophies we've been trying to go for this season. So there's that. And then we've got another song called All I Want Is You, which is probably the biggest sort of love letter musically to Liverpool that I've ever written, mm-hmm, which we're going to put out a couple of weeks after, hopefully in time for the... That'd be amazing. But,
and obviously in terms of your work with the food banks, still flying still, the streams of the Firmino stuff's had, and
five million on Spotify, which is just a good sort of outlier, because obviously we have quite a few people who you know, obviously buy things directly on Apple, which undoubtedly gets them more money than streams, but it's quite a nice sort of gauge of how it's doing, mm-hmm, to see how many you're getting on Spotify, which is always the, you know, let's be honest, it's like pretty much the standard way of looking at it nowadays. Yeah. So it's 5 million, and I think we're thinking how much we're going for, but it's hard to keep a track because, we try and just make the donations as the money comes in, because it's not doing any good sitting in the record label accounts, is it? Yeah. So,
amazing work as ever. Right, Sam, should we crack on then? Manchester United 2, Liverpool 2. Chloe, yuck. I was kind of keen to stress this last night on a couple of the videos that I did, that there's no... I'm a generally glass half full person, but I'm also not going to say... I can't possibly sit and say that any results where Manchester United walk away feeling happier than Liverpool is a world where is a good world. You're meant to feel down and miserable when you don't get a result against Manchester United. Ultimately, that's kind of what it was. We had much more at stake in that football match than they did. And once again, similar to the FA Cup game in some regards, we had it. We were capable of doing more, and we never did.
I thought we were superb for maybe 70, 75 minutes of that game of football, but Liverpool just wasted so many chances, and it was really frustrating because the exact same thing happened 3 weeks ago. And maybe if the exact same thing didn't happen 3 weeks ago, I could say, well, okay, that's just another bump in the road. We've not had many of them, but you're supposed to learn from those experiences. And I did think we were the superior side. I thought we were brilliant at times. Aside from the first 10, 15 minutes where it was a little bit scrappy and it was more Man United's game that we were playing, but yeah, it's if you win at home against them, then a point away at Old Trafford's actually really quite good. Like, no one looks at Old Trafford and comes away with the point and thinks that's horrific, mm-hmm, but with the situation that you're in, the fact that you didn't take 3 points off them at home, you needed 3 points to stay top of the league, then yeah, look, there's more added pressure and a point. It feels like 2 points dropped, especially when we were that good. But you've just got to kind of hope that it's a valuable point. You've got to just let it go and just try and get back on the road.
Yeah, it was just one of them. It was just deflating, really, isn't it, Dan? Because it's so hard to analyse a game where it can be perceived in either way. It can be perceived as 2 points drop because Liverpool were leading the game, but also it can be perceived as a point gain because we were also losing the game. Yeah. So yeah, it makes it tricky.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. I think unpacking it from that perspective is particularly difficult. For me, it's more just what we've been unable to do against them this season as a complete package when you consider how superior we are to them. And they're bound to play in the majority of those games, even the Anfield one as well. I think we've been so, so dominant in sort of across the, what, the 270 minutes worth of football we played against them. To not beat them feels like a sort of a miscarriage of justice somehow, you know what I mean? Because we are miles better than them. I know they'll crow and say, well, you've not beat us, but we are. If you look at the way the games have panned out and the chances we've created and the moments we've created and the momentum and all that sort of stuff, no one can have a conversation with me and say we shouldn't have come away with at least one victory from that. And yesterday is also that, because we were miles better than them. And once again, it's a case of creating all these overloads of players in transitions. We just threw them time and time again. We're picking apart their midfield and the way we go. And for whatever reason, we were wasteful in the final third. I think we weren't quite clinical enough when the opportunities did arise. The final pass was awry time and time again. So yeah, difficult one to sort of to analyse, you say, difficult one to really unpack, because I can't put my finger on what it is about us that means we can't just put them to the sword. There's something there psychologically, because again, in terms of quality, in terms of the way the games have panned out, they're just a moment side to me. There's nothing from the games I've seen and I've witnessed to suggest that, oh, they're actually getting somewhere. I still can't see that. All I can see is us failing to make these chances pay.
The really interesting thing, Dave, about Manchester United is, Dan's sort of leaning into it a bit there, is that they're shite, but at the same time they own Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford, and they've got Casemiro holding the midfield, and they've got Onana and goal. I know he was a bit of a laughing stock at the start, but you know, he's not a bad goal.
Well, yeah, you don't win a league with Inter Milan, do you?
No, exactly.
And get to a Champions League final. Yeah. So yeah, there's definitely something about them. You know, and it just feel like they're trying to do They're trying to complete football in a bananas way when they don't particularly need to. And it's almost like they could just put 11 really good lads on the pitch and just go, yeah, just go and win this football match, rather than trying to do this mad thing where there's huge open spaces in the centre of the park. But there was I thought there was a weird thing yesterday where every time there was play got a bit congested in the middle, if we weren't coming away with the ball, it did feel there was real jeopardy where they were going to break on us. And I just felt there shouldn't be that, considering how much better than we are. So I don't know what the answer is, but when it's happened like twice at their place, and even the game at Anfield, there were a couple of occasions when they could have scored on a transitional break, and I think there's definitely horses for courses, or the opposite of that, and I think this is one of the instances where it's just a shame that a team that absolutely hate our guts and we absolutely hate them also might have a little sort of diddle over us in a way.
Yeah, and that for me is pew to this, Chloe, that adds to the whole thing. And I think people feel that more acutely depending on what their life circumstances are like. So like, I've said it plenty of times, my uncle supports Man United, but I don't hear hide nor hair of him. I've got, you know, I know a few Manchester United supporting people, but I don't really have any great interaction with them on a day-to-day basis, so I can compartmentalise that. But there is that crowing element to stuff that makes it actually adds to the whole thing, because I do fundamentally, and you know, careful how we choose our words, but like, you know, in a footballing sense, I do hate Man United, and I hate everything they stand for, and I hate all the fans, and I hate the city, and I hate their accents, and I hate everything. No, you know, it's just like, all of the, you know, the best type of football rivalry is that one. So I can't stand seeing any of them happy. And that definitely adds to it, you know, because, yeah, not only have we got to lick our wounds and live in a world where Liverpool haven't done the business, but as they say, it's them. It's against them. It makes it so much harder to sit in because it's United.
Yeah, it does. And look, if there's anything they've wanted out of the season, you know, both things fell at Liverpool. It was the only cup that they had. They had to beat Liverpool to make sure they stayed in it. And then they got Coventry City, which makes it even sting a bit more. And then you look at the league, they're not going to get top four. They're going to stay in those Europa League spots. That's what they're really fighting for. And they've had a chance to make sure Liverpool don't equal their 20 league titles. Yeah, it's massive. And that's why that stadium, it's mad, because it was absolutely silent. And I think if it goes 2-0 before half time, it's just, it's an entire different second half in terms of atmosphere. It's, you're potentially seeing a walkout that happened at 5-0. Like, exactly. You are potentially, because they, it's not that it's 2-0, because to lose to Liverpool 2-0 at home, that's, Liverpool can do that to anyone. But it's the fact that you've just made sure they're top of the table. They're going to equal our record. We can't sing 20 anymore if they do that at the end of the season. And instead, we gave them a lifeline. We let them stay in the game. And it took one moment, and they had one shot, one goal, and then that stadium came to life because they had something to cling on to then, and we bred that, and that is what's annoying.
In the FA Cup the weeks before, so all of a sudden it gives them belief that that it can work, and that's the adds to the frustration, because I think we've all said it. I don't really get what their game plan is. I've heard more Manx talk about it, I have a greater understanding of what he's trying to do, but what he's trying to do makes no sense to me. So I don't have a greater, like, you know, he doesn't get a pass because I've now got a clearer handle on what they're attempting to do. It seems wild. It seems like throwing caution to the wind is like one thing, but it's like being just an element of stupidity to it as well, which I can't wrap my head around.
You know what I don't understand is that, like, we obviously come out with a draw in this game, but I think we were much better than where we were 3 weeks ago when we faced them. And I think me and you mentioned this, we didn't press them. At their ground in the FA Cup game, we pressed them and they just did triangles around us, and they beat our midfield. And it was deep runners that we were just falling asleep to. It was the overlapping runners from deep. And Liverpool struggled with that. And for 35 minutes of that game, Manchester United were much the superior side. Where for this game, it was a little bit scrappy, which suited Manchester United more in the first 15 minutes. But aside from that, Liverpool had, like, they were brilliant at everything else. And that is why it's so hard, because all of the front three have had a goal involvement in some way. You know, you look at the team and you're like, well, actually, there's some all right performances there. No one's had an absolute stinker. I understand people are going to name someone there. But, like, you were coming out of the game and I'm sat there like, well, no one's been below average.
I did the player rankings show post-match, and I said, this is one of those mad games where I don't think anyone played badly. You know what I mean? To your point, I don't think anyone, we've got the three categories, and I can say that someone might have been, a couple of people that maybe tinged below.
Mistake and that was it all.
Well, exactly. I mean, like, you know, we'll come on to Quanta in a second as the obvious one for them. But I was actually really pleased at how level-headed people were on that one. But there was a few there where it's tainted by the results, and ultimately it's a results business, and that's where it becomes very hard to talk about things. That it was one goal, it was one more Liverpool goal scored or one less conceded away from. Everyone's put in this top level performance, and you're talking fine margins there. You know what I mean? You're talking a matter of inches in a lot of instances. So it made it difficult. Let's talk through some of the individual performances though, because I think some of them warrant it. Dan and Alexis McAllister, you know, let's start with the best. He's just wonderful, absolutely wonderful at football. Everything good we do has Alexis McAllister's fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, it does. It feels like I've been saying this for weeks, doesn't it, in the best possible sense now. But I'm running out of superlatives for him, because just phenomenal once again. I mean, again, I feel like I'm going to repeat myself and I'm in danger of it, but defensively, in attacking sense as well, just he wins the ball back time and time again. His intelligence of where to be is just phenomenal.
The ball winning back stuff, just to jump in, is actually almost the most amazing part of it, because I've seen good players being tasked with tackling back and doing these kind of things, and then, you know, you go, okay, well, you're doing a good go, you're having a good go. Like, I remember that period before Lucas became a really good defensive midfielder, when he was an attacking midfielder, and he'd get in the right places and he'd get a foot, but it wouldn't quite break afterwards for him. McAllister gets back, gets in, and comes away with
it time and time again, and then his use of it there after is also absolutely sublime. So again, it felt like he didn't put a foot wrong yesterday to me, and somebody might point out an incident here and there, but I thought he was incredible in and around what were decent performances. He was a level above and some for me once again. Just like I say, his intelligence and his off the ball stuff, he always seems to know where to be. When there's a loose ball, he's still the one picking up that second ball, even the first sometime as well. But it is, we have unleashed him since Wataru Endo. I don't think Wataru Endo enjoyed his best game famous there. I thought he was perfectly fine. But the use of McAllister and how he's been allowed to flourish since Mataro Endo's been alongside him or just behind him, obviously the case is just sensational. And he's been a joy and a pleasure to watch in recent weeks. Like, yeah, he's been very good all season long, I think it's fair to say, whether he's in the six from the outset or whether he's obviously moved forward into the eight. But this past six, seven, I know he's been nominated for the PFA Player of the Month, and rightfully so. Yeah. For me, he wins that hands down because he has been majestic for weeks now.
It's interesting. I said this through the week, Dave, that I think if he played in his eight position all season, I think he'd be a shoo-in for Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Or he'd be right in the conversation as opposed to being like a late addition to the list.
Yeah, I mean, there was the discussion early on of like, you know, is he right for that six role and has he got the legs to do it? I thought yesterday there were moments when, because let's be honest, he's not the absolute quickest, but there were times when people were closing him down from behind and it was... You're thinking, give it, and he just know exactly when, how long he had to hold onto the ball for, how much time he had, and how to manoeuvre his body. So his ball retention and those sort of areas was just fantastic yesterday.
And we saw a few situations where actually other players did get caught.
Yes.
Curtis Jones.
But you're right, McAllister, that never seemed to happen to him. Even when it felt like he was going to, he has the awareness, like I say, and the vision to know what needs to be done to get himself out of there.
Also the only one who could put a ball on a plate for anyone, by the way, in that final third, because everyone else's passings on some of these chances are a yard behind someone or don't have the pace, or you've not allowed the player to run onto the ball. It was all a bit scrappy. Apart from him, then he was literally the one. Robbo needed an inch perfect pass down that left hand line. Oh, go on then, lad. Yeah. He was the only one who could put the correct weight on a football in the final third.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about Szoboszlai, because there was a point in the first half, and Chris Pajak was absolutely raving about his performance. He was glowing in his praise for him, and then about 15 minutes to the second half, I heard a scream from the kitchen set, this very room, from Chloe Bloxham saying, get him off, he's been shit. I hadn't really thought much about his performance one way or the other, if I'm being honest.
I was frustrated by him, to be honest with you. And it's very similar to the FA Cup game. It kind of mirrored it, actually, in a way, because it felt like the perfect game for him, because time and time again, it felt like space. I was watching, he was just running into acres and acres of space, because that's what Man United allow you. And if you do play through the midfield, which we're getting a lot of joy while doing that, he was just running at the back four with options either side of him, potentially even option through the middle in Darwin Nunez. So to be in that moment, in that situation, what felt like 5, 6, 7 times throughout the course of the game, or whilst he was on the pitch at least, and not walk away with a physical impact of a tangible thing, feels wrong to me. And I know he's got it in his locker as well. That's your frustrating thing. What I will say, to flip reverse that, and the positive element of it is his off the ball stuff is sensational.
Yeah.
His work rate is sensational as well. He's obviously got the physicality to match that, and he can put a shift in and he wins balls, and he's brilliant at loads of stuff. But when you are getting so much joy, and so often he is that ball carrier for you, and he is the one striding forward into all this acres of room, yet nothing ever materialises, I have to question what's gone on there.
Yeah, he's in an odd situation, isn't he, Dave? Because the talent's there, undoubtedly, but he misses. There's a couple of really big opportunities in that game.
Yeah, I think the one when he tries to do the half volley where Robertson squares it.
Yeah, I think he should score that.
Yeah, I think it's a harder shot because the space he's got, he's basically got to put it in near post, hasn't he? And he's got to open his body, but he's also got to take it on a rising half volley, things like, you know, well, I suppose all half volleys have rise. But anyway, so the way he's got to open his body to like put that in the near post, he's got to... It's not a great miss. The big chance on his left foot, I suppose, he'd probably argue if I've got that on my right foot, I've got more options on it.
I'm less arsed about that one.
I think he's okay there.
The goalkeeper makes a really good save.
Yeah, he's sort of like, keep in mind. Goalkeeper stood up. But the one thing I thought, there were a couple of occasions where, because he is such an elegant footballer, or he can be, and he's certainly got that appearance of arrogance in the way he plays. If he then tries something arrogant and it doesn't come off, and you're not comfortably winning, or then it's obviously going to get Chloe's undoubtedly there were loads of, like, you know, when someone gets, like, yeah, when
look, in that moment I was probably a bit too emotional. I will hold my hands up and say that.
Not the only one, yeah.
But it was just, I saw him in so many good areas where we had 5-on-2s, 4-on-2s, that literally haunted us 3 weeks ago when we could not find the final pass. And once again, we couldn't find the final pass. And look, if Darwin Núñez squares a ball 2 yards to him, he's probably scored the winner and put us 2-1 up. And we don't need to worry about Mainoo scoring a worldie. Yeah. But ultimately, watching the game, I just thought for the first 15, 20 minutes he hit, I really did. Like, I think everyone in the room felt that as well. You wanted, when Kwanzaa and Bradley had the ball, you wanted them to find that space. And instead, he dropped deep in the middle of 4 Man United players who just sat back. And what you wanted was, you wanted him to go and do McAllister and be, yeah, lad, I'll move out here. You pass me the ball and I'll get us moving a bit. And look, I thought he improved throughout the game. He has that massive chance on his left foot. Keeper makes a good save, that's fine. The volley, it's not a volley. It should just be, he should get it on target, minimum. How he's put it that far wide, I'm not really too sure. That is a massive, massive chance. And that is, you know, to potentially also kill a game of football. And it was more for me, the fact that he was finding himself in loads of acres in transition. Somehow, United found themselves, after they scored, still in this situation where our entire midfield had just bypassed them. Yeah. And we just couldn't find that one clinical pass. The thing I would say is, as soon as I saw him come off and I saw Curtis Jones come on, which I actually didn't mind that change, I did think to myself, is Curtis Jones going to be able to do exactly what Szoboszlai's just done in terms of dragging the ball past their entire midfield and finding that space?
That was, I think, the two biggest issues for us were, I think, psychologically, and we were doing the preview for this saying, Liverpool just need to just, you know, if you get into an attacking position, just square it to someone and have them finish it. Just square it and kill it off rather than take on a half chance yourself. Because we saw this against Sheffield United. We made Sheffield United harder work than we needed to. Because a couple of times when Salah just could have laid Núñez in, you got your goals up and then you're running away with it. And we didn't. And I think we tried to do that in this game. And too many times we got into good positions. And everyone's going, no, you go, oh no, after you. No, after you. Yeah. Instead of being taking it on. And that it's weird that we almost like dialed it too far the other way. And let's unpick that first and foremost, because that was the worst example of that, I think, Dave, was Darwin Núñez in the second half, where Diaz should shoot.
Yeah, Diaz should shoot.
But actually, he does the thing to kill it off by playing the killer ball to Darwin. And then Darwin tries to square it.
This is what I'd say. I would argue that the Chloe was saying before, the passes, the passes in the final third weren't, this is what you're going to do. Now, you think back to last week, and I know it was the Diaz offside goal. Salah's made Diaz's mind up for what he's going to do with that ball to him. And you're thinking, why has he played that with his left instep and the way he's found him there? But the way that ball arrives at Diaz knows exactly what to do.
You put information on the pass.
You put information on the pass. And that ball there, it's like, it's sort of like a, go on, lad. But not quite. So it's like a two. It's more than a half chance, but it's not a chance, if that makes sense, because of the way he's given him that ball. There was the same one where Diaz played one to Salah in the first half.
A bit behind
and him, it was like, and it was just behind him, and it wasn't a terrible ball, but it wasn't the ball that was needed. And the same. There was one when, was it Bradley was breaking down the right, and the John ball Nunes passed to him, and it wasn't wasn't right. So I was surprised when I saw RXG and it's just below 4.
Yeah.
And because I know that sounds a mad thing to say, because we're saying, but it was the final pass to put someone in wasn't there.
That is the perfect example, because if you actually watch it back, the ball to Mo Salah is absolutely crap. Mo Salah then falls over the ball as he's passing it, ends up on the floor. The ball is absolutely horrific to Luis Diaz, so he can't cut across it and shoot. And yet his ball might have too much pace, but it needs that much pace to hit the back post. And I don't know what Darwin Núñez does. I'd love to be inside his head, because I don't know if it's a shot, a pass or what.
Scary place.
But yeah, like you said, just all the passes just went. There was just none that was, you don't have to work to do this.
Yeah. Carbon copy the FA Cup game, by the way. Yeah. Exactly the same story.
I think of like a couple of goals. I think we scored one against Hoffenheim in the Champions League qualifying game where it was just like sensational. Pass. Yeah. You square across the goal and someone knocks in. We scored the perfect goal against Manchester City in the millimetres game, didn't we, as well? Yeah. In that one where it'll never be remembered, really, because we didn't do anything in the football match, ultimately. And that you're right, every one of those, it's inevitable. You're watching it unfold before because every pass is perfect. Mm-hmm. And every pass, I say, has the information on it that tells the receiver what they're doing with it next. Are you moving it on or are you shooting? What part of your body do you take? Are you opening your body up or are you taking it square? Are you moving on? And it just feels like a wonderful ebb and flow. And Liverpool had that in two or three occasions during the game up until that final or penultimate pass when it was just off. And so the guy who's then getting on the end of it is having to, it's not natural, as you say. Yeah. It's not then sweeping the ball home into the back of the net, inevitable goal for Liverpool. It's
digging it out on the field.
I'm now thinking back to what, because obviously there was the Trent counter against Arsenal where he hits the underside of the bar this season. But I'm trying to think of other ones because obviously people have said that we've been a bit more blunted with our counter attacking when you consider what, you know, that people would say, oh, the red arrow is going forward time and time again under like with the peak of like Mane, Firmino and Salah.
Yeah. Everton is the only one.
The
West Ham goal one.
But there was the Diaz one, the clincher against Arsenal in the cup. The ball to Diaz was slightly behind him and he has to dig it out before he kind of smashes it into the roof of the net. It wasn't like this is exactly what you're going to do at this point. So
it's good, but the thing of like we don't feel fully there in any type of in any elements. I think we're really good across a bunch of ways. I think Darwin Nunes, I thought, typified that actually. That I thought his all round centre forward performance was really good. Mm. You know, he knitted things. He was dropping deep at times. He was playing little quick first time balls. He was trying to keep it pacey. And then Liverpool's approach was don't give them time to get set. If they get set, don't push it. Come back and stretch them, but if you've got a chance to move the ball quickly, get in before they get the numbers back in. And I thought Darwin bought into that in a big way, but then his pass just would be a touch wayward here and there. And that's the thing, I agree, that counter attacking thing, that's gnawed at me all season long. That we are, people talk about how a devastating counter attacking force we are, but I never feel a sense of inevitability when we counter attack. It still very much feels like we're going to get out. That's measured, that's built, and everything else is a bit like we'll figure this out when we get across the halfway line. And that Man United game, that's twice now where we've said it before, 18-19 or 19-20 Liverpool devastate that team because those are opportunities that side was built on, whereas this side isn't quite that. And it's like if Salah had a yard more pace, you know, if you're getting that Salah in this team, I think you probably kill them off, because that one late on as well where he gets played central and he hasn't got the legs to take it away.
No.
But then also I don't, it's like he's forgotten that. So instead, he should know he hasn't got the legs to do that. Mm. So he should be waiting for the runner to come up alongside him. He should be holding it up, but he gets caught between two minds, and that's forever our sort of issue. Darwin's the one who's got the pace now to get beyond, but he's not totally, you know, he himself is not inevitable. It's inevitable that he'll still frustrate a little bit. Diaz feels a little bit slower than he was prior to the knee injury as well. So we haven't got like Mane, Salah pace plus the clinical finishing at the moment, with a bit of a sort of hodgepodge, which adds to the frustration certainly. Speaking of the frustration, their goal, it's mad. I cannot fathom. It's a bit like being in a car accident when you get wiped out when you're not looking, like someone takes you out from behind, that kind of thing, like, and you wake up in the hospital and you're like, you're in a car accident. Oh, was I? You know, we were having a chat about how Liverpool are dominant, you know, we're gonna go push on, be really good to go and get the goal now. And it's just, I'm trying to think how to describe it. It's one of those passes that centre halves play when you're a team that plays out from the back, and once or twice a season you'll get caught out doing that. I'm gutted, Dan, that it's Quanta, because and going back to our player rankings thing, I thought he was absolutely magnificent, but he also plays the pass that buys them back into the game.
Yeah.
But when you watch it back, he doesn't straight pass it to Fernandes. Fernandes has got to be switched on to get there. To also then have the audacity to hit that first time and to lob it perfectly over the goalkeeper. It's actually an unbelievable strike in addition to it.
Yeah.
Quanta could get away with that in 9 times out of sort of 10 and you might ride your luck.
Yeah.
It was one of those perfect storm moments that just threatened to just cut the legs off us completely.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, we just spent a good chunk of the show talking about how wasteful we were in front of goal and stuff like that. We should never get ourselves in this position. We are definitely architects of our own downfall in that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Quant has been outstanding is the first thing I want to say on this. He's been absolutely incredible this season. Like, who would have thought he'd have the season he's had? He's just, it spoke volumes of how trusting we've been of him. The fact that we sat here in a preview show and said, oh, fine, we're Quant to start. Nobody really kicked up before somebody started the game yesterday, which is testament to just how incredible he's been. However, it's a disappointing moment, certainly for him, because I have been so elated with him. He gets the pass all along, doesn't he? There's no two ways about that. I think that the audacity of Fernandes is there, and the finish and execution is outstanding as well. People have pointed some blame or apportioned it slightly to Kelleher and his positioning. Not for me, he's there for the pass. No, I've got no real issue.
It, the fact that he's taking it first time
catches everybody out, doesn't it? And as you say, though,
Keller's still in position to receive the ball from Quanta.
But that's what happens when you play off in the back as well. Yeah. That's sort of par for the course on that. But as you say, on another day, you know, does that just drift wide or clip the outside of the post and we all move on? Be a big sigh of relief and move on our line and say, Javel, be more careful at the back, you know what I mean? And you move on. But yeah, it's massively disappointing. Obviously, that's, you run the risk of that when you don't put teams to bed when you have the opportunity to. Like I said a moment ago, it was carbon copy what happened a few weeks ago. When you're playing against a team like that who do live off moments and they haven't really got any sort of discernible pattern to play, there's always the threat that something stupid could happen, and that was something stupid.
This is the thing for me on that, is that I'm annoyed and I'm frustrated, and I am really pleased at the post-match in particular, the people who were on our videos in particular, you know, in the comments were quite level-headed about Quanta. I think that's fair to be. I've seen more people talking about the negative reaction that he's received than I've seen the negative reaction, which I think, you know, doesn't mean it didn't exist. I mean, it clearly exists out there and it's annoying, but also the internet's full of like meffs and kids who don't really know how to conduct themselves. So it's disgusting that he should be getting any stick, but also footballers get stick when they make mistakes in football matches. That's part and parcel of the emotion of the whole thing. But I thought what was great, Chloe, was actually for him, I saw no signs of a player who'd actually made a catastrophic error in a football match in how he continued to perform afterwards.
Exactly, and that's the thing. He should be so proud of himself, and that is a 20-year-old lad who has only just really started getting into the team this season, had his breakout at the end.
Premier League start.
Yeah, exactly. And he's made one error in a game of football where Liverpool should be 3-0 up minimum at half time. Exactly. In these moments, you have to dig out the younger lads, the less senior lads, and our senior lads didn't dig him out, but he did himself. And it's all to his maturity and professionalism, because, you know, we've spoken about Joe Gomez a lot of last season, where it felt like one mistake and my God, you were seeing the worst of Joe Gomez for the entire 90 minutes. And what Jarrell Quans did was he composed himself and he went and got Liverpool a penalty practically. He went and he decided to go on a Joel Matip type run and then do a lovely cut inside pass, which, you know, Harvey Elliott does really well. But it was just the way he had that moment, and I think in the first 5 minutes he does a really bad pass to their attacker in the middle of the park that sets up a chance. But after that, you are fine. You are fine with the balls over the top because he dealt with Rashford really, really well. And it's devastating for him that he's had that moment because he's so young, and because you feel like, you know, if we're 3-0 up at that point, it's fine. It's just that you can forget it. But yeah, all you know, testament to him and his maturity and his character, at the fact that he actually went up a gear after it, and he made sure to help Liverpool get back into that game and get the point.
We've got a real player there. We really have. And they're the things, the way you've got to go through stuff. I mentioned this post-match. Steven Gerrard cost us a couple of goals by just playing blind passes back. You know, in fact, he did the same one for Henry, I think, for Liverpool and for England. So these things can happen. I referenced that Martin Skrtel did it against Man City, early doors against for Brendan Rodgers.
Chelsea football.
Well, yeah, you know, it happens. You're right. It's a thing that happens. It's how you respond. I think what's telling about it, because I've seen a few people that are saying, like, well, why is Konate not starting? Why is Konate not starting?
He nearly had his knee taken out on Thursday, and
And apparently, well, I'm not up on it as up, but he's fasting as well, isn't he, Konate? Yeah. So they're obviously being careful with him, which I think is fair. And what again is just as pleasing to see is people go, well, no one was bothered. Everyone went quid. Yeah. And as much as yes, he makes the mistake that does cost us the help that contributes towards us conceding the first goal, I'll say it that way. You know, we started again with him and Bradley down that right hand side, and I thought they both performed excellently throughout the game as well. And almost, and just to bring it on to the second issue that I was referring to before, substitutions. There were some substitutions we made which I thought were fine, like Harvey Elliott, great sub. Yeah.
Brilliant.
The issue with how we started and Dave are not killing the game off is, I thought starting Robertson and Bradley was a really brave tactical decision, because it allowed us to put two flying fullbacks on, which meant like first half an hour it's all Robertson, and then for 10-15 after that Bradley really gets advanced, and that's a wonderful way to be able to attack, because you can shift what you're doing. But when you're then needing to chase a game, bringing Joe Gomez on, who is an absolutely fine right back, and he's having a brilliant season, but he's just not quite of the attacking level that Bradley.
I think the early yellow card for Bradley basically that made Klopp's mind up. That's the substitution I'm going to make on around 60. I'm just going to have to make that, because you kind of think that if there had been a situation where he'd have had to take a second yellow, it's the last thing you want, isn't it? I think that might have been that, but yeah, I think you're exactly right. Another sort of caution to the wind, like creative sort of option that you could bring on in Bradley isn't really there. But I mean, then again, that would feel a very bold substitution to make, bringing Bradley on for Gomez towards the end of a game if Gomez had got the start.
It's perfectly sound in terms of, like, I think going to Old Trafford and having Joe Gomez in reserve, because you're in theory not giving anything up defensively for making that change, and you're not losing loads actually, because he is good on the ball, Joe Gomez.
I suppose you're also thinking that at some point you're going to be bringing Joe Gomez on as a more defensive substitution, probably thinking, well, we are going to be two or three up
we were set up, Chloe, to go and get that game won, and we were left with, and like Curtis Jones is brilliant, but he's rusty, and you saw that, because he almost reverted to type when he comes on to the game, of that thing of like the chief criticism of Curtis Jones is that he holds onto the ball too long, and he did that too many times, and that speaks more to a not sharp Curtis Jones, and that's why he's starting on the bench instead of Sub Ozlai there. But that what ultimately contributed, I think, a little bit towards Gomez not quite as much of a threat in the final third, and Curtis Jones just not as on it, not as pacey, not as direct, maybe playing within himself. And then again, you bring Cody Gakpo on for Darwin Núñez, who himself is not as direct, even though I thought Gakpo was fine. That did ultimately Harvey Elliott was the only one I thought who actually really improved us when he came on.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I would say about Joe Gomez is I actually didn't mind the triangles that he managed to make with Harvey Elliott and Mo Salah. And look, if we're talking about these players, who lays the ball to Diaz, who has that shot?
That is Joe Gomez.
It's Joe Gomez. Joe Gomez probably could have or should have had an assist there.
If not an assist, a hand in a goal, because Salah should score the follow-up.
So I actually, look, it's not the substitution you want to make that helps you go and win a game of football, but also Joe Gomez is a fine player for us. The problem obviously for me was Curtis Jones did struggle a little bit, and he, when you took off Szoboszlai, who I'd moaned about not being not having an end product, then we actually lost the spaces where Szoboszlai was actually actually entering into when we brought Curtis Jones in, because of the how good he is at ball retention and making sure that we recycle the ball. Well, we needed someone to actually just step on the ball and step into the space and drag players away.
The game changed as well.
McAllister's into the six, a double pivot, which killed us because he was the most influential.
Well, this is the thing. It's a double-edged thing. Liverpool changed the system, withdrew McAllister to deeper in the pitch, but also then were more men between him and all of our men, because United were dug in by that point. They had no need to come out and leave spaces anymore. So, I mean, again, and I watch. Well, I'm not digging Joe Gomez up, by the way. When I make that point, it's just in terms of, you know, your fractional percentages when you're trying to make something happen in a football match. But you are right, you know, he could have had a talent hand.
Conor Bradley, by the way, to get a yellow card, his head had gone for that yellow card, let's be honest. I don't mind it because the maturity shown afterwards to make sure he doesn't get into those situations is brilliant by him as well.
My overall thing was for two more points. One, just to repeat the Manchester United points, you know, linking in their second goal, Dan, is like, again, Kobbie Mainoo's a good player. Mm-hmm. He's a good player. We should get a bit tighter to him, but I also don't, you know, he gets played the ball inside the 18-yard box, he rolls it and he curls an unbelievable finish into the top corner. Keeper's got absolutely no chance. This is the problem. We have this sometimes where we've spent years now going, Man United are crap, Man United are crap, Man United are crap, and they are, but it's a different Man United, because you get that logic of like, well, look who United have lost to this season. Doesn't work like that in inverted commas derby games. I know it's not strictly a derby game, but it, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a much more fierce rivalry than the Merseyside derby in its own right, in their ground, with those fans on top and all that kind of stuff. It's a different kettle of fish to when it's a similar game state and they're playing Brentford, because we've seen it. You know, look at the game against Sheffield United for us of the week. It was flat. That atmosphere was nothing until we had something to chase and we had something to fight for, and then all of a sudden Anfield's on top again. So we forget that sometimes, that it's a different game of football. Liverpool versus Man United is different to any other versus Manchester United game. And they do possess quality, and you know, that's the reason why they are where they are is not because Ten Hag is a tactical genius. It's because he owns enough footballers who've got the ability to do moments of magic in football
matches. Without a shadow of a doubt. And once again, you know, I'll come back to it, we allowed them to have that foothold in the game. He should have been out of sight by then, but we do find a way of getting embroiled into these matches with them for some reason, whatever that is, whether it's psychological or whether we don't show up at Old Trafford, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, you're absolutely spot on your Man United point. Like, I still sort of don't come away from that game thinking, you know what, Ten Hag might be onto something there. It's the opposite. I don't think he's onto anything at all. I don't have any, not that I want any, but I don't have any faith that he's the right man for that job. The longer he stays in that job, actually, the better for my sanity. Yeah. I don't think he's the answer whatsoever. So, yeah, it's an incredible goal. I think what annoyed me and seemingly Jurgen Klopp more than anything about Casemiro. That goal is the Casemiro overhead kick, which fans, I'm not sure who it is, in the centre of the park, in acres of space. That can't be allowed to happen, Lane. And that feels mental to me, that that's a thing that's just been allowed to go on. So, yeah, really frustrating. But ultimately, when it comes to their actual goal and the execution of the finish, it's right at the top draw. Keller can get nowhere near it. So, once again, that 5-10 minutes after they scored was just a whirlwind, because, as you say, Old Trafford were up all of a sudden. It felt like a proper football game, having been relatively serene for 40 minutes worth. And then during that 40 minutes worth, that's when I felt, I spoke to you before the game, it could have turned toxic for them. That's why I didn't mind our front foot forward approach and sort of attack as the best form of defence. Go with your most aggressive fullbacks, because we can kill this game and we can turn the atmosphere and the walkout to possibility. So that was all fine by me. It only had a stumbling block whereby we didn't quite manage to get that done.
My overall feeling about this, now that I've had a little bit of time to sit in it, is that I think we've performed magnificently with the injuries that we've had. And I'm just going to, before I continue this point, I will acknowledge that Manchester United had Willie Caballer and Harry Maguire at centre-half for this game. They've got suffered all kinds of injuries, but it's not the point. It's irrelevant. These things are mutually exclusive events in their own way of what Liverpool have... I don't think Keller has an issue. So actually, losing Alisson, I think you can cope with. I think Keller has performed exceptionally. Yeah. I don't think Alisson necessarily changes the tide of that game particularly. But I think someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold and Diogo Jota in particular, that we've coped without those footballers is a testament. But I feel like this was a game where you can get through so many, you can manage your way through so many situations. And I think we have done exceptionally. But as an example in this game, I don't think we needed Wataru Endo. So what are you going to do? Put McAllister in the six, but actually we needed McAllister in the eight. what you do when Trent Alexander-Arnold is fit, and whether you start the game like this or moreover you shift to it during the game as we were doing in the first half of the season, is instead of bringing Gomez on for Bradley, you bring Trent Alexander-Arnold into midfield in that situation and take Endo off, and then you either bring Bradley on or you put Gomez in at right back, and then you've got Trent and McAllister still in midfield with whomever, and that gives you the impetus, and then Diogo Jota is one of your killers. So instead of bringing off Darwin Nunes for Cody Gakpo, you're bringing on for Jota, and I would contend that even just one of those two players available to you would have made a significant difference to us. And yeah, look, you know, it is what it is. Life's a shit house, but you're talking about it's we've coped amazingly, but that for me felt like the first time where we've creaked a bit. You know, where I can see where you can. When you're robbed of world-class footballers, you're robbed of the ability to turn the tide of football games, or more frequently turn the tide of football games.
Well, I mean, I've seen loads of things online saying, "Oh, if we'd had Jota, if we'd had Jota." But as we said before, it's the pass into the striker. I mean, obviously, having your most composed, probably your best finisher on the pitch is always going to be an advantage, but. Like you say, Trent, I can't believe there hasn't been more conversation about us missing Trent.
Yeah.
Trent's our best passer of the.
Well, because Trent's been brilliant.
Yeah.
But he's not Trent. Like a mad disrespect that's fallen upon Trent's door. I saw something of a guy, and he wasn't being overtly disrespectful to Trent. He was like, "Well, where does he come back in?" I'm like, he comes back in right back, mate, because he's the best fucking right back in the world. Yeah. And I know Bradley's been exceptional, but I think there's one or two Liverpool fans who are going to be stunned how good Trent is when he comes back into this team, because it's like we've forgotten, which is ludicrous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think this is why when people, if anyone is thinking that the Europa League is potentially, do we need these extra fixtures now? Potentially with the players who could be back this week, and the players who were back last week, like Jones, who potentially need more minutes.
Yeah.
This could be a massive, massive assistance to them getting game time in ahead of that, like that result, that the run of three fixtures in a week, three away games in a week.
We'll need them all, aren't we?
We're gonna need the depth of the squad there.
I just look at the impact Kevin De Bruyne has had since coming back from Manchester City, and that's what we've lost. Not the goals as such with Trent, but the creativity, the assists.
Yeah,
the impact that someone like that in your team has, and again, there'll be people doubtless, because I can, you know, I'm too long in the tooth in this game to not know what response you get to stuff. Diogo Jota's injury prone, so you know he misses
big injury
games
prone as well.
Yeah, he misses injury, he misses games of the season. So I appreciate that, you know, you don't get to choose which games he's available for. But Trent is never injured, really. You know what I mean? He's very rarely around. This is the longest spell that he's been out for us as well. So like, you know, to miss someone of that quality in those kind of situations, that's one of them. That the flexibility and the quality that someone like that brings is a huge one, and he's the one for me. We just need to get him back on the pitch, because there's going to come decisive moments in the season where you're going to need someone to pick out that once in a lifetime pass, and that's the difference between being a very top of the league team and being a team that's just that falls a little bit short, because your big players step up in the big moments, and we've just been so madly unlucky with it. But again, it goes back to it, I think Klopp's point, because I've seen people criticising Liverpool's forwards and all kind of stuff, and fair, they're the guys tasked with scoring the goals for us, but also they've scored the goals that have got us where we are so far. So I'm going on a bit of a rant on this one, but it's been pecking me out. I don't think you get to be the kind of football club that scores 99th minute winners against Nottingham Forest and has two Darwin Nunes goals when you're 10 men against Newcastle, and then throw the baby out with the bathwater when you don't score a winning goal against Manchester United at Old Trafford because you've not taken your chances. You know, we've had our luck at various times in the season. It's
definitely rough for this move a little bit. I take your point, and there are definitely imperfections to this front line, as good as they are, and our firepower, we've said it all season long, is amongst the best in Europe, if not the very best. But it does feel like right now one too many of them just going through a little dip in form, certainly from the goal. I take your point about Darwin Núñez. Salah's the key one, especially given his numbers are so remarkable year in, year out. The fact that he's not quite at it is a blow, of course, especially when Diogo Jota is missing, because I think we'd all... your Trent point is absolutely spot on, and we've just spent some time earlier on speaking about how the final pass wasn't quite right. Trent is your man for that, for all intents and purposes. But I think we'd all would have added Diogo Jota to the team yesterday and probably never could, given the way the game panned out, because Liverpool had enough of the ball, enough of the impetus, enough of the chances, enough of the moments for someone like Jota just to go, oh, you want the ball in the back of the net a couple of times, sound, give that to me, he's that guy. I think we've missed him more than ever in those types of games, but I think generally speaking, adding someone like Trent back into squad this week is going to be absolutely sensational, and I don't have any sort of reservations or question marks, as you mentioned the point there, that people thought, how's he going to get back in the team? It's Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think he'll find a way.
Yeah, and as I say, what the beauty of him is that thing of like the right back thing, but we saw it in the season. If you're chasing a game, 60 minutes, you push him into DM, and then you bring, and now, which we didn't have in the first half of the season because he was injured, Conor Bradley then plays right back for us, and all of a sudden, what? Mm. Have a look at that. Go and deal with those kind of angles that we're throwing at you. I have to ask the question, and I did put it on Twitter because I know people are hot and emotional after football matches, and that happens. I know people feel your feelings. You know, that's what I would preach on all this stuff. It's an emotional roller coaster. It's a pastime. If it wasn't, you know, people don't feel this way about chess, and they don't get this way about Crown Green Bowls. You can do, because every sport's got its exciting moments, but Liverpool give you them for like 90 minutes twice a week, you know, and then everything in between. It baffles me, the people who are publicly stating, because that's what it is when you go on social media and you type things out and you put it out there into the world, that the title is gone, when Liverpool are level on points with Arsenal with seven games still to be played. Mm-hmm. I am fully appreciative that we've made it harder for ourselves than we'd have all liked, obviously, because if we'd beaten Manchester United, we'd still be clear on points, top of the league. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into this whole, you know, if we score a goal and a half more per game than Arsenal over the next seven games, then it won't matter, you know, all that kind of shit. The point is that it's seven games of football. We're right there. We're right in the mix. We'd all prefer it to be more in Liverpool's hands, but does anyone not believe it's possible?
I'm fully on board with it being possible.
Yeah. I think it's very much on.
For me, just quickly on it, I think what yesterday is more than anything, obviously it's a frustration, obviously it's them, amplifies it to make it even worse. It's the what might have been element of yesterday, because we should be clear. And I also think on that as well, I think obviously the impending departure of Jurgen Klopp, what we know is coming down the line, makes all this a lot worse because it's so, so important. If it wasn't important enough anyway to go and win this Premier League with fans and all that sort of stuff, the fact we know this is our last opportunity to do it with Jurgen at the helm makes emotions run even higher. That's all I'd say on it.
Yeah. No, I think I said on the video, it's just you're allowed to feel how you feel after the game. Yeah. And for me, it was disappointing for the main reason that we battered them. We absolutely had the chances, but no one could put the ball in the back of the net. And you needed someone to be a hero in that game, and no one really stepped up to be that hero. But like you said, we've had games where that happens. For me, it wasn't a case of you ever sit down and say, oh, we're out of this title race. It was more of, we've got to forget about this quickly and we've got to go again. And it's frustrating at the fact that it's now not just on us. We've also got to rely on other teams dropping points or dropping goal difference, which a team above us doesn't seem to concede loads of goals. So mine was just more of the frustration that I thought we were excellent and we didn't come out with what we deserved because of our finishing. And ultimately, it does make it harder, but you've got how many games left? Seven games left of Jurgen Klopp in the Premier League. And I'm just going to go into them and try and get behind the lads as much as possible, because that is all I can do as a fan. And if that gives them some bit of extra motivation or a bit of support that helps us get over the line, then that's what I'm going to do. And even if it doesn't get us over the line, it's seven more games with the greatest manager I'll ever see manage Liverpool Football Club. And I've got to enjoy that no matter what.
Until the next great one.
Until the next
one.
I might not be alive. Liverpool are taking years off my life.
Weeks away.
Dave?
If you'd have asked me straight after the game, obviously, you know, you say you were emotional. I think my head had absolutely gone as you can hear from this. So I rarely just scream Blue Murder at a screen when I'm watching the game, but yeah, there was very much loads of that. But no, I think the difference to previous, because obviously it feels like we've had our fingers burnt playing Wolves at home at the end of the season yes. a couple of times, and the fact that the fixture list has thrown that up again, it's like, you know, the last thing we want to be is going to the last game of a season, 1 or 2 points, and you know, we're away from where we want to be. Mm. Potentially this time, there's a difference where we are currently ahead of the team who've, you know, been able to take advantage of what we haven't been able to do. Mm. The fact that there's Arsenal in there is interesting, but I think that the goal difference is irrelevant to a point, because I think if we're gonna make it up, then it's gonna be I don't think there's gonna be a game where we score like 7 or 8.
They drop points.
I think it's more it's more a case of they drop points, yeah. And I don't think it's a case of they drop points by being beaten. I think it's they drop points because potentially the front players are knackered yeah. from having to play Champions League games and then having to play league games. So potentially I think you're looking at them drawing a game. Mm. I mean, you know, I might be wrong. They might win all this, and in which case you hold your hands up and say,
exactly,
well done.
That. Yeah.
And because at the start of the season, no one was saying that we were going to be, like, you know, level on points for seven, yeah. level on points for top of the league with 7 games to go.
Yeah, we had a super chat in very early doors while we were doing this, but from NK says, it feels like a massive momentum shift, which is super scary, but we need to stay supportive and believe. Klopp made us believe, so don't let him down. Mm. Look, again, we've seen it happen now. It's now in the last like month, that momentum has shifted about 3 different
yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
You know, when we left...
Last weekend.
But when we finished that Arsenal game, we lost to Arsenal, the momentum was technically actually with Man City, because they had the games in hand that were going to take them to top of the league, and they never capitalised on that. And then it was also in Arsenal, and Arsenal actually have carried that momentum.
Yeah.
But despite carrying that momentum, being in this wild goal scoring form, which has led to them racking up the goal difference, here we are on 71 points alongside Liverpool, who have been stuttery a little bit at times throughout that, and haven't been as fluid in front of goal, and haven't been banging it, haven't been watertight defensively as well. Mm. And again, we've been sort of ticking along without, you know, a lot of these footballers as well. The thing that got me in as part of this is how many people are very quick to be like, that is the point, that if Liverpool miss out, it'll be Old Trafford. And I would like to remind everyone that Liverpool had a legitimate goal not given in a game of football this season. So, against Tottenham Hotspur, and I would contend, and when everyone scoffed when they said Liverpool wanted to replay that game, and I would come back to this, if Liverpool lose out by any increment between 1 and 3 points on this league title, then that is, you know, let us never forget that that was something that was taken out of Liverpool's hands and given.
Get the asterisk.
It's been better thinking about.
But look, it's 7 games of football. Yeah. I don't agree with this notion that Liverpool are the only team that are capable of fucking it up.
Well, just on that, actually, sorry. I think that's probably our toughest game out of the way in the running for us personally. Just not because they're very good, because I believe they are, just because of what it means all the intangibles in the round. Exactly, the psychological impact has and all that sort of stuff. And we spoke all season about which of these teams going for the title now was Arsenal, Man City, who looks like putting a real sustained winning run together. And we've kind of come to the conclusion it's nobody.
Yeah.
The fact that we drew yesterday makes the likelihood of us going 7 wins straight a little bit higher. They'll have to do something like 9-10 to go and do that. So that's something, maybe being ultra positive and real sort of glass half full, that's something I'm clinging on to going. And also the fact that we are playing well for all intents and purposes, but not quite clicking in certain departments, which is clearly the final third. If that starts to click together, there's just certain things, as you mentioned, the key players coming back as well. There's a couple of things to cling on to from yesterday for me. And one of them, probably the key factor you mentioned there, Champions League coming back is a big thing, Europe as well. But I just think, the fact that they now need to go, what would it be, 9-10 games winning on the spin, that feels very difficult to do, whereas we need to win 7. Possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, but no reason not to believe, I think, ultimately, is it? And I hate to be that guy, because I've been doing this a long time, and I know it's I think it's right to say we'd have all bitten anyone you ask's hand off to be in this situation with 7 games to be played. It's hard to detract or to take away, to subtract where we could have been and where we were the week before and all that kind of stuff. it will remain true if we lose the next game and we're 3 points behind. Mm. We still would have bitten anyone's ass to be 3 points with six games. So I realize it gets away from you pretty quick. Yeah. But as long as Liverpool manage to not have it catastrophically collapse, I just wanted to be interesting. I said it before, it sounds just so really stupid. I don't get to choose how the season ends. I don't, you know, but I know how I would choose it to end. Obviously, it's Liverpool winning the league, but I want us to win it in one of them mad moments where you're on the radio and you're waiting to hear scores, because I've twice been in Anfield when I've heard
the wrong end of that.
We've
that
been on the wrong end of it twice, but I can also tell you the feeling I felt in the brief moments where we had it is unlike Glenn anything Murray. I've ever felt in the history of anything ever.
If you could bottle Anfield up after Glenn Murray had scored.
I was there. What a day. If you can I say, if we win all seven, do we think we win the league?
Yes.
Okay. So it is in our hands.
One thing, North London derby that I'm looking at, and then it's City.
I think Champions League's got a
Chelsea
huge
as well. Yeah. Chelsea have got to go. Yeah. I know Chelsea are mad as a box of frogs, but they hate Arsenal. Yeah. They absolutely hate Arsenal. The other one is, if we'd have won yesterday, do you not think there'd have been a huge sort of faux coronation? It's like, oh well, it's Liverpool to lose now, and it's like, so
which I'd have happily dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean, you know what I mean, it's like, oh well, they can only fuck it up from here, can't they? So
we took pressure off ourselves in that instance as well, because you're absolutely spot on. And also, that, to come back to my point from earlier, that would have meant an 11 game winning run, something like that for us, which again feels really difficult to do. So at some point we have to drop points. We've done it now, it's over.
Listen, again, you know, we've got the Europa League to come, which we'll talk about that in part two, and yeah, we just got to continue to sort of tick away. And it goes back to this point of you don't get to pick the winner of the league, because if you did, we'd all choose our team, and that, therefore there'd be 20 winners, you know, because every football fan would have a choice, wouldn't they?
We all said it was going to go down to the last game of the season about 4 weeks ago, and it's still very much the case.
How we bounce back from this is going to be vital. That Crystal Palace game, is it right? And that's next at home. We just got to pick ourselves up and get a win there. Yeah. And then not worry about everything else. I said this last week, don't worry about goal difference. Goal difference will either sort itself out, or it won't be needed. Because it so very rarely decides anything in footy. I think it decided a Klopp League title under Mainz once upon a time. Negatively, I believe, actually, but you know, so it's possible. But I said before, the plus nine goal difference looks absolutely
unconquerable.
Totally. But things change, they do. Right, we're going to take a very short break. When we return, we're going to be discussing the Europa League, because let's just park the league for a bit and talk about that other competition that Liverpool are in to win.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everyone, we've got an amazing competition prize for you this month. It is this incredible Liverpool away shirt from 04-05 signed by none other than goal scoring hero that season, Mr. Neil Mellor. Yes, if you want to be in the draw to win this, then head to redmenplus.com, sign up as a legend tier subscriber or upgrade from a captain tier and get your name in the hat at the end of the month for this wonderful signed Liverpool shirt. See you there. Hello, everyone. Just so you know, there's like obviously been breaking news with regards to Everton's latest points deduction. We're going to be covering that over on the Bias Football Podcast, which follows on from here on redmenplus.com. And while you're here, let me tell you, we've got an amazing offer for you. If you want 50% off a year's subscription to redmenplus.com, use the code RACE, as in title race, because that's what we're embroiled in right now, RACE, to get half price of an entire year. So that's all the video, all the podcasts, all the documentaries, everything that's on there. The 700 expert insights around Liverpool's future manager. Around Liverpool's future manager, which we were getting some rumours there might be hotting up.
Listen, signed, sealed, delivered by all accounts. Yeah, looks like he's very much the man. And like I say, I've got him covered from quite literally every possible angle.
You spoke to João, well, he literally told me how to pronounce that. João Carlos Teixeira. This week.
Did, yeah. Good guy. Yeah. Good guy. Solid fella. Really liked him. And we're still chatting now. He got the winner for his Chinese team over the weekend. So I dropped him a little message. Congratulate. He's in fine form, by the way, over in China. But yeah, he spoke very highly of Ruben Amorim as well. Got a lot of friends, obviously, in the current sporting squad and says they all absolutely buy into every single thing he does. Brilliant communicator, brilliant manager, and one of the greatest young managers up and coming in Europe, it looks like. So yeah, I'm excited, as was João Carlos Teixeira, by the proposition of him taking over the Reds. So yeah, what's not to like?
Excellent. So yeah, get involved with that interview, and I hope for the fact I wouldn't be doing it justice to try and name the amount of people that you've spoken to in recent weeks.
Honest to God, like, yeah,
lots of things I've edited.
Chloe's right. She is right. Like, journalists from over there, Portuguese experts, yeah, commentators from that neck of the woods as well. Honestly, it's a frightening list of people, and topped, of course, by Joe.
Excellent. So yeah, head to redmenplus.com. Post this podcast, you're going to get the Bias Football Podcast chatting around everything else around the Premier League, but also, yeah, if you want to keep up to date with Ruben Amorim and everything else, then yeah, get involved, use the code RACE. Right, okay, Atalanta, Chloe, change of competition, change of focus, probably a good thing at the moment, just to have a little bit of like a palate cleanser here. Quarter final, something to buy into under the Anfield lights. Not how we'd have it. We'd always prefer, of course, to bring them back home for the second leg. So there's a nice juicy sort of pressure on this game to go and get it done.
Yeah, there is, and hopefully it will be a good distraction. We can forget about what happened at Old Trafford. But I think we mentioned that Sheffield United was the last Premier League game under the lights at Anfield for Jurgen Klopp. This could be, if we obviously get through to the semis, one of two of his last. So yeah, I'm expecting a really good atmosphere. Atalanta have shown in the past couple of weeks that they're actually a really good side as well. So yeah, I think everyone will be right up for this. And also, let's be honest, we don't know how the Premier League's going to turn out. We can hope for the best, but you know, this is a competition that we do have control over, because we love two-legged ties under Jurgen Klopp, and the idea of being in a semi-final and having the second leg at Anfield makes me absolutely made up. So I can't wait to hopefully batter Atalanta.
Yeah, they're sixth in Serie A at the moment, lost 2-1 to Cagliari at the weekend, which is good stuff. 5 points behind Roma, so not in the European place, I guess that means, at this point in time. Obviously, when we played them last time, Dan, they were a Champions League team, and you know, and we absolutely mullered them everywhere with the Diogo Jota and his Robbie Fowler-esque performance up front for us. But yeah, I'm hopeful here that obviously we can't afford to be complacent. It's an obvious thing to say in this one, but this is another one of those examples where we believe ourselves to be a Champions League quality football team. I think we've shown that all season long, really. This is an opportunity here for us to, yeah, as Dave was saying earlier,
get some minutes for players, but also still put a strong side out and put a good show on it.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, I think a professional job is the order of the day, to be honest with you. I don't think there'd be any air of complacency or arrogance whatsoever heading into this one. You know, it's a quarter final of the European competition, albeit not the European competition we'd like to be competing in. But as you said there, I think some of the opposition managers we come up against in the Europa League this season, even the players have come out and said that that's a Champions League side playing in the Europa League. And obviously our league position in the Premier League suggests that as well. So yeah, I make us strong favourites for the entire competition, let alone this game still. As Chloe references there, we're still masters of our own destiny in this competition, which is nice. So yeah, it'd be nice, obviously. Obviously, it'd be a luxury if we'd come out and really sort of blitz them and get the job done in a manner that sort of suggests we could rest players in the week following. I'm not sure we'll be looking to do that in this game in particular. I think it'd be full strength and then maybe some minutes from the bench. It'd be nice to have Trent, Jota and that available if possible to get some minutes into their legs. That'd be handy. But yeah, I'm not underestimating Atalanta whatsoever, because you get caught, don't you, when you do that. But what I will say is, having said all of that, it has felt, and we've alluded to it throughout the show, really, it has felt like we're playing well at the minute without putting teams to the sword necessarily. It would be nice just to break the shackles a little bit. And Atalanta, certainly when we came up against them, it might have changed somewhat stylistically. We're very open and they were very gung-ho, and it was very will try and outscore you. If they come to Anfield with the same approach, there is the prospect of us putting them to the sword a little bit, which would serve two purposes. It would serve getting a tie over in the first leg, which would be nice, and also a bit of a blade sharpening exercise for Mohamed Salah, who feels like he needs some goals. Darwin Nunez likewise, possibly even Diaz, go to Gakpo at some point as well. So yeah, I'm excited for it, but as much as I say I'm not going to go in arrogant, make no bones about it, like, I'm expecting us to be pretty comfortable over this.
The standard Italian approach to this, they would be coming to Anfield and looking to keep the door shut and looking to get it back to their yard, little ground, yeah, big atmosphere, all those kind of things. So yeah, I mean, hopefully it's just a game
where he doesn't play like that normally.
No, yeah. Hopefully it's a game where they naively come flying out the blocks.
That tends to be what he does.
Until I see that, I'm going to believe. I'm going to go with the stereotypical approach to Italian football and presume they're going to come and park the bus. But that's the thing about it, is that regardless of what happens, our away form in Europe, I think there's extenuating circumstances to it this season. To be fair, we battered Sparta Prague away from home. Yeah. But we obviously lost a couple of games in the groups. But I think a lot of that was to do with just the group state as much as anything else. But actually, our European away form has not been amazing at times. So we do need to really make sure that this is as job done as possible, really, at Anfield.
But I'm sure, didn't we get beat at Anfield?
Yeah, we did.
So we won 5-0 away. 5-0 away, lost 2-0 at home. So, I mean, it shows you the mad COVID season, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's an interesting one, the way that Italian teams have been in recent times. I mean, even Inter in that the 2022 season, they beat us at Anfield, having us beat them at their gap. So they felt a bit different in comparison to the traditional Italian approach in games. But yeah, I mean, if they do come, I mean, you're saying about not putting teams to the sword. The last Europa League game, obviously, we were 4-0 up within about 14 minutes. So, and that was a team trying to play their own brand of football.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they do try that, I mean, you've got to say good luck there.
Yeah. From the away perspective, I'd like there to be something on the line for the away game in Atalanta, but like at the same time, you know, just for the vlog. I must admit that my only real experience of that is that Stadio Olimpico game against Roman in the semi-finals in 2018, which we lost that game, but ultimately it was the Gini Wijnaldum finally scoring the away goal thing that was the thing that got us in the driving seat for that one. I think because there's a wider picture to play here, and I think we're going to have a conversation around the Champions League games and how that affects Arsenal and Man City on the Bias Football Pod, because I think this next 2 weeks now is going to be very, very decisive in terms of how that running sort of goes. But yeah, anyway, let's pick an 11 if we can. Chloe, the goalie picks himself, would you be doing anything wild with the back four?
I mean, it depends where Trent is. It's probably one of those things where you bring them on for 25 if you possibly can, 20. So I'm going to go Conor Bradley. I'll bring Konate back in for the fact that he missed the other game. Virg, your left back, I mean,
one from three.
It's what, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, do you keep Tsimikas match sharp? Because he might be needed at some point. You might need when
did he last play Costa Simicas?
This is it.
We're a few weeks away from Simicas, so we have a week. Yeah, we've used like three left backs in that time.
Yeah, I'm gonna find that out. It doesn't feel that long since he's
been a couple of weeks, has it not?
Yeah,
considering he's been available that entire time. Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks.
I saw him singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" on the bench of the day.
But to the point, like that. Listen, if we're 3-0 up, if we're 3-0 up in the first leg, then the second leg suddenly becomes a more Costa Simicas type game, I guess.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
if he's not played any football,
not that bothered right now because I'm rotating between two and two only at this moment.
Okay.
He's sadly third on my pecking list, and I need to win this game by as many goals as possible.
Played 45 minutes against Sparta at Anfield.
And what was the date of that?
That was the 14th of March.
Considering the amount of football we play, that's a few games ago.
And in the league, he hasn't appeared since the Nottingham. 6 minutes against Nottingham Forest. He played 33 minutes in the League Cup final back in February.
He's been available.
He's
been available his whole.
I think Costas will start. That with all that in mind,
that's not much fussy. That's all I'm saying. I don't think either of them will start the game, by the way. I'm just saying that's not a lot of football.
It depends what you do. Yeah, Van Dijk will want to play, so I think he'll play.
Mm-hmm. It's to get through to a quarter-final, the Europa League. This might be the only other cup we win all season.
He's a fucking good footballer.
So would you be Gomez with Simicas second leg, potentially?
Yeah, I'm sound with that. I'm rotating between two.
I don't think Costas Simicas left-back.
I'm going full strength and he's not my full strength team. Yeah.
So Robertson.
Yeah, but I think you've also got to think in a couple of games. I think you've got to think in a couple of games time who you're going to be playing, because you're thinking you've got Palace on Sunday, yeah. Atalanta the week after, and then you've got that mad run of three
games.
Atalanta
the week after, that's when I can play Costa.
Yeah, that's it.
But even then, I think in an ideal world, you're trying to give as many players 45 here and there as possible.
But you just
utilise your five subs.
What score do you think we've got to win here? But I'm interested to know what score line are we taking 3-0. To Atalanta that makes you play Costa Simicas left?
3-0. I'm the same. 3-0.
Okay.
Or 3-goal advantage because away goals don't exist anymore.
Title 4-1. All of yous.
Yeah. I really like Costa Simicas. But I'm just making the idea you've got to. You can contractually oblige.
I'm in the Costa Simicas.
Playing Robbo or Gomez for 60 and bringing Costas on then. Like,
I don't think you need Gomez as a left back in a game where you're the superior football team. So I'm happy with I'm more than happy to give Costas 60 minutes and give Robbo 30, and then Robbo's good to go for the weekend, as far as I'm concerned.
Has Robbo played loads of football now?
But he was injured
he was injured
for ages, came back, got injured again, and he's come back again. We're being careful.
We are drift fading back in a little bit.
That for me is the exact same thing. I mean, even though
Don't say it.
You know, he's obviously had an injury record, so you still try and treat him with kid gloves where you can. But I mean, which is why you're kind of thinking, what do you do with Canate? Because I mean, I think Kwanzaa could comfortably do another game.
Yeah,
I think Kwanzaa could, and then you're getting Canate back onto the Premier League run.
I think you've broken the cycle a little bit, and you know, some of that is protecting him, and obviously, as you said, there's a physical toll that Fasten takes on football as well, which I think they're being careful of a little bit, which explains Salah's withdrawal, I think, against Sheffield United. But also, you know, not so much him going the full length at Old Trafford. But I do think there's something there where keep Quanton in the team for a double reason. Obviously, test him.
Say this,
you know, he had that little mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see if you can just get him, make sure he's definitively got that behind him. But also, then Canate is good to go.
You're backing him as well, though, by starting him again. That's the other thing. Yeah, you're saying, don't worry about it, on we go. Yeah, I like that.
The only reason I said Canate from the off was because in other games where we've not done this, we've gave 45 to Virgil and 45 to Canate. Mm. And I don't think that's a game where you give only 45.
It
could be if you. Yeah. Open up.
I think that's the.
It works against West Ham. in the what's it called in the Carabao Cup, didn't it? So
what were your half time? We smashed
Carabao
them.
Carabao Cup
we?
As well. Yeah. Though,
it's possible
it's,
though.
It's West Ham. They put a decent lineup up that night.
I'm not against Van Dijk and Quanta starting this one, and then you've got Konate, and you can choose how the game state would depend on what you do there. So you can either bring Konate on just to get him a few minutes so he's ready, or do you do a full 45 swap of Verge if the game's well done and dusted? Yeah. Cool, that all sounds fine by me. Endo, presumably just to carry on.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't see anything else yet, personally.
Harvey, Elliot, and Harvey.
Yeah, I think Elliot. Yeah.
No, McAllister.
McAllister's
I'm winning this game of footy. What are you doing?
McAllister has to start.
Why do you think we can't win with Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott in midfield?
Curtis Jones needs another half an hour for me.
It's not that. It's a quarter final of Europa League.
Like,
I'm playing the lad who's been our best player for the past 3 months.
Yeah. Plus, getting it done first leg is nice if possible.
And Harvey Elliott is me changing midfield there.
For Dom.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're bringing Elliott in for Sparsley, not Jones in for Sparsley.
No, I think Jones give.
I think he needs another half an hour on his legs, personally.
Okay. Gakpo.
Diaz. Salah. And Darwin Núñez.
Okay. I think I'm the same. The only question mark I'd have around that, and listen, I'm not privy to sports science going on at Liverpool now, I do wonder with Diaz, and that's not to say he wasn't really good again yesterday, because I think he was right to the dying embers that game. He was putting an absolute shift and he carries up
the
field. Carries up the field 50 yards right at the end. So he doesn't look like he's showing any signs of fatigue or tiredness. However, I do wonder if there is a game whereby you can say, Louis, you really need to stop playing 90 minutes here. This could be one of them. And you do go Gakpo from the start and then maybe give Diaz 20 or something.
Cody Gakpo has started and played the full 90 of Liverpool's last four Europa League games.
He has been a cup player for us as well, hasn't he? A Carabao Cup, he was our top goal scorer and stuff.
And that, just out of interest, is actually two centre forward, one from the right and one from the left as well. So there's every chance Cody Gakpo will, because again, it goes back to the thing, we've got a squad, I think historically, I think if this is a Champions League game, I don't think there's any doubt, but, and I'm going to say the words because someone's got to say them, and it might come back to what we, but it's not, won't be my doing. I'm going to clarify this. Atalanta are the sixth best team in Italy, and we're at Anfield. If you can't win this game with Kostas Tsimikas and Cody Gakpo in your team, then, I mean, and again, you've got the other lads on the bench. It's a 95-minute football match.
I agree. The drop-off isn't so dramatic that we should be panicking. With Tsimikas and Cody Gakpo, by the way, I wouldn't panic if either of them were starting the game. However, having said that, I think Gakpo is more likely to be one of them, given how much football Diaz has played. That's just my take on it.
Sure.
I get on form. It's the front three you mentioned, by the way. Without a shadow of a doubt.
This is not. I'm not sat here saying let's play Bobby Clark and James McConnell as two of our three midfielders here, or putting Luke Chambers back in at left back, or Jaden Dansley in the line centre forward, or whatever. I'm talking about the squad that we've used all campaign,
seasoned internationals as well.
Exactly. But also. Hey, listen. If we do, just play Robertson and McAllister and Endo, whatever. But well, you're right. We probably will have a slightly better chance of absolutely steamrolling them. But for me, I'm looking at Crystal Palace going, I want the best lads on our best lads to have as much in the tank as possible for that Crystal Palace game, because that is, we've got that run of away games that follows, if four, including the Europa League. Mm. Yeah. That's a big one. I want to leave Anfield with a big not even necessarily in terms of fours and fives and whatever, a big win, a big comforting win.
And whatever, Jurgen Klopp will obviously toe the party line of one game at a time, and rightly so, but there's no way in hell they're not looking at the bigger picture and what's to come and managing and navigating these next 2-3 weeks with the group that we have. And there might be a world whereby we don't even know it, and it's better that somebody does only play 20 minutes, or better that somebody does get an hour. So there's bound to be the odd selection or even substitution, like the Salah one, as you mentioned, where you go, oh, that feels odd, but for a reason not known to us and for a bigger picture reason, it just makes perfect sense.
I'd love it if we just played a really second string team and just went, now we think he was a shite.
And then went on and won.
Chloe
anyway.
Would not love that.
Chloe would not love that.
Well, like, the like old Everton lineup. Yeah, I'm like,
Lavucci. Lavucci at left back. Chiavella. Pedro Chiavella in centre mid.
Oh, yes.
Right, cool. Let us know what 11 you will be playing for the Reds in the comments underneath. If you're listening on podcast, then absolutely a 5-star review. And if you want more from us, we're going to be carrying on into the Bias Football podcast. We're going to be talking about the relegation fight, Everton's point deduction, Spurs taking advantage in the top four race, and of course we're going to be talking about the title race and our title rivals in Arsenal and Man City and what the upcoming couple of weeks is going to mean for them as well. And yeah, if you want to get that for half price for a full year, use the code RACE off get a half price captain yearly subscription on redbubplus.com. Thank you so much. Ta-da.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.